Hello, listeners, and welcome to the 113th episode of the Nerdstravaganza podcast. In this episode, and in the wake of his most recent album release, we're happy to celebrate that most influential of artists, Weird Al Yankovic. But before things get too weird, let's bore you to tears with our weekly geekly, geekly weekly update. Brian, why don't you go first?
It's not something that took up a huge part of my week, but it's something that I think is kind of important and kind of amazing, so I'll share it. I watched the Dota Championships on ESPN this week.
What was that like?
It was surreal. I mean, honestly, I don't really play Dota all that much. It wasn't terribly exciting, but it was surreal watching a major network cover e-gaming. It's going to become a thing, and that's amazing to me.
There's been kind of a big backlash about it, too. Sports fans are not too pleased about it.
Right, like the bro-y crowd doesn't get it, right?
Yeah, no, not at all. They were kind of furious about it, and it was on which ESPN?
I think it was ESPN. I think it was the real deal.
Oh, was it? I thought maybe it was on ESPN3 or something, which I was going to say, did they miss out on late night lacrosse or something?
What was their issue with it? Are they upset? So the bro-y sports crowd is upset that this now non-bro-y sport is shown on their sports network?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's the same kind of huff that the World Series of Poker probably got right off the bat, where, you know, oh, it's not a sport whatsoever. And then, of course, the World Series of Poker kind of took off and became, you know, super popular, and everyone watched it, and people flooded their local casinos to go play Texas Hold'em. So I would assume it's just that initial shock value right now that they're kind of alarmed that a video game is on their sports network.
I'm happy about it. I finally might have something to watch on ESPN. Did you enjoy watching it, Brian?
It was interesting, and I was predisposed to enjoy it. Are you guys aware of the scale of the championships?
In terms of money at stake and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
It's pretty significant, isn't it?
The first place team, which is five players, won $5 million.
Wow. How hard is this? Do you think we could get good at it?
It's an MMO, basically, so yeah, I mean, you devote your life to it.
We'll begin tonight. Just kidding. Anything else?
That's all I've really got that's very fun and exciting.
All right, Eric, over to you, man. What have you been up to?
I did something you will laugh at and appreciate at the same time. Specifically you, Thomas, but I know Brian will get a kick out of it as well. I went back to Boomers, also known as Grand Prix Racerama. For our listeners who don't know, Tom and I were huge fans, and I guarantee that Brian was as well, although I don't know if we've talked about it much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of the original Grand Prix Racerama down here in South Florida. I think we may have talked about it before. So much so that I actually run a fan site on Facebook called, I will always call it Grand Prix Racerama, which has a pretty good number of followers, about 300 followers, almost all here from South Florida. That said, now that it is Boomers and has been Boomers for a long time, it is a mere shadow of its former self. It is in no way as glorious as it once was.
And this is an arcade/go-kart place we should tell everybody who doesn't.
Right. I was going to, yeah. The basic details are, it's at one time it was, and I think it still is, the longest banked go-kart track in the world. It was at one time the largest arcade in the world, which it lost that title long ago because it hasn't updated in an eternity. It sold to a company called Boomers, which had a prior facility up in Boca Raton. The original that we're talking about is in Dania, Florida. Pretty much since that sale, it has crumbled apart. They have not upkept it whatsoever. There hasn't been a new arcade game in there in eons. They tore the original building down, so now yes. The go-kart track is far away from where the actual remaining building is. So you buy tickets to go on the go-karts, you still have to walk like a half mile to actually go on the go-kart. One thing they did new, though, and I kind of liked it, and I actually took part in it, is they embraced basically what theme parks have done, which is the season pass. And now for about $40, you can buy a season pass, which lasts you 3 months of unlimited everything. which is not too shabby, because a one go-kart ride by itself is about $10. So if you go in the go-karts four times, it's paid for itself, and you've got 3 months to use it. I did the batting cages and a couple rides on the go-karts and a bunch of other stuff. I mean, I probably got my money's worth already, and I still have a few weeks left in my summer break, so I'm sure I'll be going back.
Roller coaster still offline?
Yeah, that thing. I mean, if they don't use that thing to film a zombie movie pretty soon, it's going to be a total waste, because it's really perfect for it.
It has been declared unsafe, hasn't it?
Yeah, completely unsafe. It's a wooden roller coaster, again, for those listeners who don't know. And it's been out of commission for at least 2 or 3 years now. And it's just sitting there rotting away. They're using it as a glorified billboard.
And the arcade is in no better state than when last we visited, I take it?
Well, you and I went when they showed some improvement. There was a while there when it was really bad, and they've kind of cleaned it up and set it up nicely again. So, but it hasn't taken any major leaps since that point.
I want to play some Marvel versus Capcom after visiting the well-appointed bar. They can definitely accommodate me still, though, right?
Yeah, well, I think that bar that was on the side by those little bowling alley things they installed, that's all gone. And they just put games back out again.
Well, good. Good to know that in some capacity they're getting back to their original mission. I am still holding my breath for the rebirth of arcades. VR is going to either help with that or put the final nail in the coffin. We'll see.
One last thing, though. And I posted a picture of this on the fan site I was discussing earlier. To give you an idea of how far the place has really slipped away, they still do the ticket games. And actually, that's the vast majority of what makes up the arcade at this point, which is true of most arcades in America at this point, that it's purely prize-based games, those deal or no deals, or the Cyclone stop the light at 10, you know, earn some tickets kind of thing. So they have the prize counter, and one of the prizes for 8,500 tickets was a crock pot, a Hamilton Beach crock pot.
Nice.
I took a picture of it and it's up, and maybe I'll have to share it with our site as well. But I didn't even know what to make of it. I was like, it was surrounded by lava lamps that you could win. And then right in the middle in the box was a Hamilton Beach really big crock pot.
I got to know if for fewer tickets, I could win like a slap chop or a ShamWow or something.
You know, I didn't even take the time to look around really in detail. I should have, but that caught my eye and I immediately just took a photo on my way out the door.
That is great. Hey, here's a zany idea. As I recall, there was a little bit of space in that arcade. What would prevent them from letting an awesome community organization like the Nerdstravaganza podcast, say, hold some kind of like arcade event there or some kind of gaming event, even when, you know, we bring in consoles or something, just some kind of a shindig? I mean, can you rent the space out, or would they welcome something like that, you think, for the traffic?
Well, I know they had the space you could rent out for birthday parties and stuff in the back by the mini golf. I don't know if you remember that room that had all the picnic tables and stuff in it. Aside from that, I'm not really sure.
We need to give that. We would need to re-nerd that place up. That's what's lacking now.
Oh, yeah, completely.
All right. So playing in graveyards, anything else?
That's pretty much it for my week. I mean, that was my first major outing since feeling better. So I had to make it adventurous.
Sounds like an adventure. I guess that brings it over to me. Nothing so adventurous as what you did, Eric. I finished watching the Clone Wars. I've been doing a little power leveling in Kingdom Hearts so that I can easily beat the final boss, and playing a little bit of World of Warcraft. And that's pretty much it for me. So I guess we can get into tonight's topic, which is Weird Al Yankovic. The only, as if I had to say his last name, like there's a million Weird Al's running around. This episode is being recorded in the wake of the release of his new album, Mandatory Fun, which I think is an excellent album. It's a standout album, and it has been extremely well received. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, this has actually been my favorite one in a long time.
I'm very excited for him too. The numbers come out tomorrow, I guess, and we'll know if this is a number one or not. I'm kind of got my fingers crossed for him.
Yeah, me too. I've enjoyed his albums mainly thanks to you, Brian, over the years, and it really excites me to see him doing so well in the modern era. Not that he's not timeless and shouldn't do well in any era, but I think he's resonating with a whole new crowd, the internet crowd, as it were, or the YouTube crowd, if you prefer.
I've seen a lot of, you know, conquer the internet and king of the internet stories, and his social media and his 8 Days of Al and all that kind of stuff have really been big.
I think more so than ever before. I mean, his stuff has always kind of had like a twist of something remote, recently timely. I mean, as far back as you go, he would have songs, obviously, like Yoda was, shortly after Empire Strikes Back came out. And of course, he did a follow-up on Star Wars when Episode One came out. He did, that one.
The saga begins.
The Saga Begins, right? Which actually, I loved that one. I hated Episode One. I loved that song. So there, it's always been timely, but I think this is the first album as a whole from start to finish where it didn't seem like anything was, hey, how can I just be funny? But how can I be funny, but also really, really relevant? And it seems like every song and every video they put together for that week of releases absolutely fit into that formula.
Relevant in terms of social commentary or pop culture or both?
Both, really. But there was definitely more social commentary than usual.
Yeah, I'll say this one really stands out with regard to its message. I'm almost cheering on the songs as I listen to them. You know what? Let's do this. You guys both mentioned some Star Wars songs he did in the past. Before we get into an in-depth discussion of the current album, why don't we kind of step back in time and recall some fond Al-related moments from our past. Maybe some songs that caught you at a particular time or that you associate with some time in your life or some positive experience. I will go first to sort of set the tone because I've got a pretty good one. With Weird Al, I was kind of hesitant to say that I liked him because as a fat kid, his songs Eat It and Fat got me teased kind of relentlessly. As dumb kids that would remember the chorus would, taunt me with it. So that when I met Brian and really started hanging out with Brian in high school, I think it was high school when we really started hanging out a lot, Brian.
Our class.
Yes, correct. Yes. I go over Brian's house. We're like playing video games and stuff. He's like, "Hey, you like Weird Al?" I was hesitant to say yes. I was kind of like, "Eh." But Brian started playing, I believe it was Off the Deep End was the album at the time. And wow, like I let go of the sort of scars that the kind of dipshit kids had left me with, and that album was great, and that really brought me back into the Weird Al fold, and I've been a fan, thanks in large part to Brian, and I'll get to that when I talk about my next story. So that's my first one. Who else has one?
I have a completely different experience with that because, from my recollection, and maybe this was different because, in the Northeast, at least at this point, when I first started listening to Weird Al, my recollection, and again, it was elementary school at this point, was everybody loved Weird Al. Every kid I talked to absolutely was infatuated with Weird Al. I didn't know any kids who didn't. And that was, again, around the Beat It era, let's say. So, what album would that be? Dare to Be Stupid? I
I
think
think it
so.
was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that the one where that Eat It was on, Brian? Do you know?
Yes, I believe so.
I'm trying to think. I think 85. And the album so much that I can actually really clearly recall. I had it on a cassette and rewinding and replaying the song Dare to Be Stupid over and over again just so I could learn all every lyric to it.
One of the best Devo songs ever released.
Yeah. But I mean, I absolutely loved that. And then to follow that, about a year or two later, and it was right after I moved to Florida, there was a special that I believe was either on or MTV or VH1. I can't honestly remember. But it was when they both still actually played music. And it was called The Complete Al. And it was about an hour-long special. And what it did was told the story of his life through little dramatic acting things they did. Like it was a documentary. And they infused the music videos into each step of it. And I recorded it on a VHS. So, of course, it was like really shoddy. And I watched that thing to the point where the video was just like had scan lines through it and was falling apart because I watched it so many times.
Wow, that's dedication. You wore out media listening to Weird Al and watching Weird Al.
Oh, yeah, completely. And I always looked for that video again. And I'm sure it's out there. And I haven't looked in a while. But it was never just available, like that video that I watched the TV special. I don't remember that ever being available in any kind of media format aside from my VHS tape that I recorded.
Very cool. What about you, Brian?
I don't think I can talk about Weird Al without talking about Dr. Demento. I heard Weird Al before I got into Dr. D, but Dr. Demento used to have a radio show on local airways. I think it played on Zeta, and it was midnight to 2 a.m. on Sunday. So I always had to sneak it because I was up till 2 a.m. on a school morning. And it was just traumatic. Getting in trouble and getting yelled at, and she, you know, my mom would like expect me to do it, so she'd start like checking on me and everything, and I had to listen to earphones like under my pillow, just oh my god. But Dr. Demento played a lot of novelty records, and Weird Al was always the king of them. I mean, there's a lot of like big names like Tom Lehrer and Spike Jones and God, what was his name? Whimsical Will. But Weird Al was always like the success story. And by the time high school came around and CDs were available and everything like that, I just had to have everything Weird Al.
Yeah, and I think it was that devoted fan who I started hanging out with, Brian, and that got me to be a lifelong appreciator. That got me to be a lifelong fan of Weird Al. And that'll take me to my next story, I think. Well, it's not so much a story as it is an observation. I didn't really keep up with the albums like you did. So you would always have them. And this was like kind of before things were so prevalent on the internet, or maybe I wasn't tuned in, but I was never really expecting a new Weird Al launch. So you got me a couple times where I would come over your house to hang out. This is back when we used to hang out like all the time. I would come over your house and you would like, hey dude, have you heard this song? Like you start playing a song and I would hear the beginning of some like terrible, terrible pop song. And like, oh God, I'm gonna have to tell Brian that I don't like this. And then much to my surprise, and you got me with this multiple times, Weird Al would start singing and I would be like, oh, thank God. It's a good version of a crappy song. One thing that really stood out, one really memorable example of that was Grapefruit Diet, which was a parody of Zoot Suit Riot, which it was especially funny because, in my opinion, I don't think any of those like swing songs of that era were ever meant to be taken seriously. Like they were jokes, but that actually kicked off like a 6-month like swing music fad in like 1999. And so that one really stands out because it was Weird Al doing a parody of a song that was never meant to be taken seriously, that started a musical movement that itself was a joke. So if you haven't heard that, it's all about it. I think it continues in the vein of Fat and Eat It, and it's about a fat person trying to lose weight by eating nothing but grapefruit. And I really love that song, and I thought it put a really nice sort of epitaph on the grave of that really abominable late 1999 musical fad that came and went not quickly enough, in my opinion.
And again, I'm not sure if this is the point you're trying to make, so I just want to clarify, because I if this is what you're saying, then. But I loved the fact that it's talking about like basically a fad piece of music that came and went, and he just changed the words to Grapefruit Diet, which was a fad diet. So he just took one fad and replaced it with another fad.
Yes, exactly. The Grapefruit Diet, there was a period of time, it's now like a cultural meme, but there was a period of time where that was like the hot diet. And just like swing music, which was just like a passing fad, so was that diet. And it was ultimately discredited and tossed out the window. Just like swing. Brian, do you recall that? Do you remember playing that when I came over and my delight at hearing it?
Yeah, I do remember you always loving that song.
Still one of my favorites. Let's pass the grapefruit spoon back over to you, Eric. You got another one?
I'll go in a different direction because I started really loving him at a pretty young age. So if I take the fact that the album came out in 1985, I was about 9 years old and I was already a dedicated fan. I loved that album, Dare to Be Stupid, so much. Which is why when I found out in 1989 that he was actually going to have a movie, which was UHF, I remember losing my mind. I was so freaking excited for the fact that Weird Al was actually making a movie. I didn't even know if there was going to be his music in it, which, I mean, yeah, there are a couple of videos that he did that are in it. And I didn't care. I just wanted a Weird Al movie so badly. And I remember going to see that movie, and to this day, it's still one of my favorite comedies of all time. And it still infuriates me because it's the only movie he ever did. There was never a follow-up to that movie, and I'm pretty sure it was complete failure in theaters, and it only has maybe a cult following.
Yeah, I'm fond of it myself, and I'm granted I haven't watched it in quite some time, but my memories are fond, and I wonder why it wasn't very well received. Any thoughts on that, Brian?
It is, I begrudgingly admit, a bit of a stinker. There's some horrible stuff in there, and the production values aren't the best and everything. And there were some jokes that Al ultimately was just like, God, just take that out. Just take that out. You can watch him on the DVD release, like the extended features. But Al pops up and says, like, look, I understand you're a completionist and you want to see these things. There's a reason you've never seen them before. Just don't watch this.
So the lack of positive critical and fan reception, I guess, accounts for there never being another Weird Al movie, unfortunately.
It was not a great film, but it was like a fan's wet dream. I remember going to the theater and seeing it alone. I didn't care if I'm a loser or anything like that. Fine, none of my friends are cool. I'll go by myself. I think I saw it like 3 times in 1 weekend. I owned the VHS. I owned the DVD. I owned the director's cut DVD.
Well, let's not forget that Weird Al's contributions to film weren't confined to UHF. Dare to Be Stupid was featured on the soundtrack of the Transformers motion picture.
The good Transformers motion picture.
Yes, the... <Right. laughs>
the animated one.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So, Brian...
Yeah, it's during the Junkticon scene, where you get to listen to Eric Idle rant incessantly while listening to Weird Al. Which is kind of like a nerdy wet dream. You see Transformers, you listen to Eric Idle and Weird Al at the same time.
Yeah, they delivered big. That movie, I remember really liking it. I haven't watched it in a while, but I remember enjoying it immensely. Although, I will say Dare to Be Stupid didn't quite fit. I understand like the Junkatrons or whatever they weren't exactly described as the most sophisticated robotic life forms out there, but I always felt that that was a little bit shoehorned in.
Yeah, they talked like they were a radio recording, like DJs, like on loop.
Like the guy from Explorers.
Oh, God. That's an awesome, actually, example to give up in this sense, because it kind of has a similar layout, except in a different order, where that movie is fantastic, and then all of a sudden this part at the end comes up where you're like, this doesn't seem to fit it at all.
When you say they sound like radio recordings, they sound a lot like Bumblebee in the new live-action Transformer movies.
It's an Easter egg.
Yeah, if the Easter egg was rotten and sulfury. And...
Yeah, it's an Easter egg sitting outside since last Easter. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was the green egg that they was just hidden in the grass and they didn't find it.
Yes.
Right.
Goes well with ham. So, Brian, all right, we'll let you finish up the memory lane trip. Have you got another one, another memory or association to do with Weird Al?
One of my favorite things that Weird Al has ever done, if you owned the DVD, if you owned the CD to Off the Deep End, was there, I think it was 13 minutes. There were 13 minutes of total silence after the last track, and then he just started screaming and banging and smashing things into the mic as loud as he could, and it scared the living shit out of people.
I actually I forgot all about that until you just mentioned
that
it. Great.
I love that. Like surprise, and I love that it would. Obviously, he was not trying to cause cardiac arrest in anyone. But
I'm surprised he didn't get sued. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, let me ask you for something that might be impossible to narrow down. Do you have a favorite or even a handful of favorite Weird Al songs?
Definitely. Dare to Be Stupid is definitely one of them. It's probably my all-time favorite song by Weird Al. The other one is actually my karaoke go-to song. And that is, I don't know if you remember One More Minute, it was kind of like a lounge act very slow, almost like a slow doo-wop kind of song, which basically talked about him breaking up with his girlfriend and wanting to do horrible things to himself instead of spending more time with her. It has some spectacular lyrics. My all-time favorite being, "I'd rather clean all the bathrooms in Grand Central Station with my tongue."
Now, this is a Weird Al original. This isn't necessarily a parody of somebody else's song, right?
Right. It was a parody of a style, but it was not a parody of an actual song.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I have to say one of my favorites is also an original. It's Airline Amy, which is a song about Weird Al basically being in love with this flight attendant and reading into her just routine flight attendant duties all of these basic professions of love. Quite humorous. Also, not really a parody, just kind of like a rock song. How about you, Brian?
Also an original. One of my very favorite Weird Al songs is Happy Birthday.
Refresh my memory about that song.
You should be good and happy that there's something you can eat. A million people every day are starving in the streets.
Oh, gosh. That's almost as good as "You Don't Love Me Anymore" when he asks, "If you don't mind my asking, what's this poisonous cobra doing in my underwear drawer?"
Now, how familiar are you with his music videos?
Fairly, fairly.
So if we ask the same question, but for music videos, what's your favorite Weird Al music video?
Man, this new album is now making it difficult to narrow
it down. It's got a lot of gems. It really has a lot of gems.
Yeah, it really has. It's a little bit underappreciated, and it's fairly recent, but he did an awesome kind of roasting of Lady Gaga in the song...
Polka Face.
Perform This Way, which is sung to
the tune of whatever that stupid song is. I hate Lady Gaga, so I don't know what the original song was.
Right, right.
That was pretty good. And of course, as much as I hated being made fun of because of Fat, that video actually did have me rolling on the floor laughing like every time it came on.
Yeah, I was going to say that is my favorite Weird Al video, only because if you watch it side by side with the Michael Jackson Bad video, it's flawless. They go together so well, like scene for scene, panel for panel. It's perfect. And yes, by far my favorite part in the whole video is in the Jackson video. There is a guy in a red leather jumpsuit on roller skates, full dancing and doing splits and stuff, on moonwalking on roller skates. And then of course, if you watch the Weird Al one, there's a really fat black guy who is barely standing up, just slowly skating across the screen, and that's it.
Awesome. What about you, Brian? Favorite video?
There is, during his internet phase, a flash video for one of the polkas. If I make no mistake, it's Angry White Boy Polka.
Yes.
It is just so perfect because he takes on every persona that he parodies in the polka in the video, and it's just very funny.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the polkas. That is a staple of his albums, and I don't know how well you know all of them, or maybe you just know certain excerpts from certain polkas. Do you have a favorite polka? I'll let you go first, Brian, since you brought it up. Do you have a favorite polka of all the polkas he's done?
If I'm right about the name, Angry White Boy Polka.
Correctly, that was a parody, or rather, I guess it's not really a parody, it's a re-singing to polka of all the sort of metal rap, Limp Bizkit type of crap that was during that era, right?
The new metal days.
Yeah, new metal, that's what it is in short, yeah. That one was pretty good. How about you, Eric? Got a favorite polka?
Yeah, mine is, again, off of the Dare to Be Stupid album, which is, again, that's definitely still my favorite Weird Al album of all time, and that was Hooked on Polkas, which was, of course, like all 80s songs and stuff, and I love that one.
I have to say, I don't remember which polka this was, but I remember it because he starts it off, or at least there's a part of it where he does the stupid Spice Girl song. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want, what I really want. That polka in particular stands out because it had a lot of, man, there's just so many crappy eras of music, and you know what, I think that's kind of Weird Al's magic. Pop music in general really sucks, just like a lot of like pop culture, and he preserves it in amber, but it's not just amber. He preserves it in this sort of mocking amber, if you will, so that he actually outdoes the original artist in a lot of cases. And years later, not only does his work stand on its own, but as the music that he was mocking has becomes increasingly irrelevant, the mockery becomes all the more sharp, I think, which makes it magical.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the one you're referring to, by the way, is Polka Power, which is off the Running with Scissors.
Oh, yeah, that's right, right. And I think that's where Grapefruit Diet was, if I think that was.
Yes, it is.
All right, cool. I was right. And Brian, you said Angry White Boy. Okay, so we got to poke us down. I guess we can get into the discussion of this latest album. It sounds like we're all pretty up on it. Do you think this is going to be his most successful album ever? Least successful? Draw in a whole new crowd of listeners? Is this going to be his last album, as I've heard rumored? What do you guys think?
I don't see any of that. I do see it kind of maybe being like a Weird Al renaissance. Like, I do see this kind of being a nice little rebirth for him. But when I say that, I think it's because his listeners tend to always kind of fall into this mid to late teens to early 20s age bracket. And I think it's been too long, or maybe he just wasn't relevant enough, that age bracket really didn't know a lot of Weird Al or didn't care. And I think that'll change now.
I think the No More Album comment was more of a, I'm just going to make a bunch of singles from now on because the album is dead. I think Weird Al music will be around forever and ever, and I could not be happier. He's really hitting his stride. I think this will be his first number one.
Yeah, so explain the goal he's going for. He's never had, I guess, an on-the-charts number one album, right? Is that the case?
It's never... I believe that is the case, and I know for certain that it's never been release week number one.
Mm. Well, I hope he gets it. Let's talk about some of the songs, though. I want to get into that. I don't know if it was the first one released or the first one that kind of rose to like mass prominence. I heard the songs, I think, as I was listening to the album. Like, I bought it day one and I was listening to it, and then found out that there were these videos being released too. Word Crimes obviously stands out as one that I've seen a lot of people who I never even knew were Weird Al fans sharing. That's one of the songs I mentioned earlier that I was kind of cheering along to as I was listening to it, because it really does irritate me how widespread just complete disregard for proper grammar is.
Yeah, I think the sentence you just used to describe that qualifies.
It might very well, but I would stack it up against most sentences uttered in the modern day.
Spoken word is vastly different, in my opinion, from written word, and I don't mind if Tom misspoke that he misspoke. I mind when people write books like that, or correspondence like that, or when I get professional emails, are you coming to meeting? No, there's not. No, there's no R, U. Those aren't words. That means nothing. That's gibberish.
And that's not Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer?
No, God no.
Does anyone even get that reference, or am I way off on my own on that one?
I think you're off on your own as far as I'm concerned.
That was a kind of late 80s Phil Hartman character that was a repeat character on Saturday Night Live, which was Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought you were just making a joke.
No, that was actually that was actually a thing. I feel kind of pretty stupid for knowing that now, but that's okay. I think it goes with today's topic, so I'm going to let it go.
Well, yeah, but to get to the point, and thanks, Brian, for leaping to my defense, I can forgive transgressions in speech because it's spontaneous, it's coming out, as we know, because we spent so much time editing podcasts, all the stammering, the uhs, the ahs, the lip smacking, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just part and parcel of spontaneous communication. But when you sit down to write, you have the luxury of time and seeing your words and being able to judge whether or not they are strung together in a coherent way. And for people to not even give a second thought to proofreading or using an automatic spell checker. It just disgusts me.
That little video of Weird Al in the checkout line, that's not really a music video, that drives me nuts, because that is in every city, every town. That's everywhere. 10 items or less.
Yes, yes, yes.
How has no one caught that? How has no one caught that? And why does no one care?
I just think it's one of those situations in which a bad thing is allowed to get out of hand and then it becomes the norm. And that's why words like irregardless are still in circulation, because people don't get like bonked on the head and shamed for using them. Eric, what do you think? You're a teacher. You must have some views on sort of the, and I'll stretch English here, memification of stupid stuff.
I do, but honestly, the memification stuff that you're talking about, like people actually saying LOL or writing LOL instead of actually writing laugh out loud, but people now say LOL, which kind of caught me off guard the first time. Like, I didn't know you actually say that out loud.
You don't.
But people do. People definitely do. But I think the ones that bother me more are not the ones that are part of this pop culture where it becomes trendy to say, because those come and go. They have always come and go. Even words that we consider part of our regular dialogue now, like cool. Cool doesn't mean anything. Cool means it's got a low temperature. And it was used as slang, and that one kind of stuck, whereas most don't stick.
Okay, but let me ask you this, Eric. I'm your boss. I'm asking if you can attend a meeting tomorrow at 2:30 in the afternoon. Is cool a proper response?
I have a pretty awesome relationship with my boss, so cool would definitely be fine coming from me.
Let me. I knew you were going to do that. Let me back up. In general,
No, I definitely wouldn't use it in a new work environment specifically, unless I absolutely knew my boss and knew that was comfortable. If I was starting a brand new job with a new principal, I would definitely not use the word cool in a response to an email or even in conversation. That said, those kind of things bother me less. Like, the informalities bother me a little bit less than people have misused words. And I think the whole point of them using is to sound intelligent. And then they misuse a word or use a word that isn't a word and sound more ridiculous than when they started. Supposedly, instead of supposedly, drives me insane. And I have to admit, I have, and I won't name names, but I have family members, plural, who are very guilty of that one. And I do call them out, even though I feel obnoxious when I do. And then the other one, damn it, I just had my head and I'm blanking out.
Well, it's okay if you don't remember it, Eric. Most people could care less.
Or couldn't care less.
I'll tell you what, I just want to decimate people who don't speak properly.
There was actually an article online on one of the techs today that used that one all wrong. And I wanted to write something, and I was like, I'll just leave it alone.
Yeah.
Because decimate. I think that is, again, one of those words that has become just part of the language to say that you've just destroyed your enemies, and not to say that it actually has a specific meaning, which it does. The article was talking about how the iPad is decimating the competition when it comes to online browsing, and then it showed a graph showing that the iPad was like being used at least 99% more than the other ones. And I was like, so it's not decimating at all. It's doing way worse than that.
Right. Exactly. Brian, Word Crimes, the excellent song by Al, has kind of gotten us off on a grammar tangent. Any final grammar tidbits, or would you like to talk about the next song on the album that you might like or that you like?
Maybe someone can explain this to me if I bring it up. I cannot understand how entirely unrelated words start being used. For instance, Weird Al's album dropped Tuesday. What? What does that mean?
That's ghetto slang writ large. As you recall, you remember when we worked at Babbage's, we would have like people come in, yo, when that new game be dropping? It's just like ghetto slang that has crept into the common language, I guess, right?
I don't know if that applies to the word dropped in that sense. I want to say it's the other way around, because if I'm not mistaken, I remember hearing the word dropped being used on like 60s and 70s like DJ broadcasts. So I don't know exactly if that one followed that, or if it went the other way around where it was kind of incorporated.
Or where it was adopted as part of ghetto slang?
Right, just because it's like, you know, radio talk. By the way, I totally remembered the word I was trying to remember earlier.
What was it?
It was conversating.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that one, I don't even know where to begin, because it doesn't even sound right. Like, some of them, you go, okay, I get it, because that kind of is the way that word sounds. Conversating doesn't even remotely sound correct. I hear it, and it's like, how did that even come out of your mouth?
I don't know, man. It's like you're trying to be perpetrating like you're smart.
Like, there are ones that are more subtle. In fact, one of them came up today. I was at my friend's coffee shop. And, of course, the most common one that's misspoken at a coffee shop is...
espresso with the X.
Right, with the X. But you know what? As ridiculous as that one is, there's a part of me that can let that one slide a little bit. Because all it is adding a consonant sound that isn't there. You're not remaking the whole word.
Yeah, I don't think anyone thinks it's spelled that way.
I bet if you put a gun to someone's head and made them write espresso, it would definitely have an X in it in 90% of the cases. Other songs that stand out on this new album, Mandatory Fun. I led in with Word Crimes. Brian, what's another song that stands out to you?
Sports Song.
Yes.
Which is an original, right? He just made a march.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not really a parody, but it's brilliant.
I like how they eloquently state their case, and then they sort of midway through the song break it down, like, just to get our message across, we're great, you suck, we're great, you suck, we're really not that great, but you still suck.
The best part about that song, and I'm hoping, but I can't see it any other way, is that it's meant as a complete sarcasm. It's basically mocking sports fans. And mocking all of those, like, sports songs, even like the We Will Rock You kind of sports songs. But it's going to become a song you hear at sporting events. It's going to be played at sporting events.
I sincerely hope it is, so that the people singing along to it don't realize that they are actually being mocked by the song they're singing along to.
It's going to become incorporated like that. It's absolutely going to become part of it. I guarantee it.
Do you see that happening, Brian?
I am all for it.
Full disclosure, I am a lukewarm, kind of sometimes baseball fan. Basically, when my dad gets me riled up, I'll watch baseball for a little while in spurts. But I definitely do not like the culture surrounding sports, or really the nature of most sports fans. So them adopting an anthem that mocks them sounds great to me.
I'll admit I am a diehard hockey fan. It is the only sport that I truly follow. I absolutely love the sport. And more so than just, oh, I like my team, but I genuinely love the sport as a whole. So if I do go to a hockey game and that is played, I will have just a big shit grin on my face.
Well, let's hope it does get played. So, Eric, you go next. I mentioned Word Crimes. Brian brought up the sports song. What stands out to you on this album?
I was going to go with Word Crimes.
That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that was my... I mean, as a teacher, which other one am I honestly going to pick?
No, I should have saved that one for you, knowing that you are a teacher. But I'll bring up another one. And as a science-minded person, I know you probably appreciate it. That being Foil, which was sung to the tune of some song I didn't even recognize. By the way, I should mention that I am now blessedly out of touch with popular music. I didn't actually recognize the majority of songs on this album from their actual pop chart counterparts.
Yeah, the exact same problem. I mean, in the past, every album I've usually been able to at least figure out, oh, this is from this source material or that source material. Half the time I listen to the Weird Al one and I've been like, I wonder what the actual song sounds like, and had to find it.
I had to look up Royals, which this was based on, and I have to say, what a boring song sung by a young lady who appears to be on Quaaludes.
We have to link Puddle's Pity Party during this, because there is such a better version out there. There is, like, I think he's 6'9", like, big dude, just like, you know, not hugely fat, but like tall, wide shoulders, dressed as like Marcel Marceau clown. Nails Royals.
What is it called again?
Puddle's Pity Party.
I have not heard of that at all.
Oh my god, look it up.
We will, and I guess we'll have to post a link, because I don't know if that one's common knowledge at all.
We'll definitely post that up in the show notes.
Yeah, and for the record, Tom, I'm with you on the Royals one by Lords, I guess her name is, right? Because I didn't know it for a long time either. And admittedly, that is one of the songs I knew before I heard Foil, only because people would talk about it and talk about it. I'm like, all right, finally, I have to figure out what the hell song they're talking about. Because not only would they talk it up, but they would talk about how she's this young girl and she writes all of her own material. And I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of impressive for a vocalist nowadays, I guess. And then I listened to it and I was like, yeah, it totally sounds like she wrote it herself.
Look, not to trash somebody who can sing and perform. I can do neither of those. But that song was just, like, boring. It came across as, like, elevator music. I think Weird Al really spiced it up.
Yeah, most likely. And he definitely made the lyrics more entertaining.
Yes, and it's about those that I want to talk. So you being a science teacher, you must... In fact, I know you have a healthy disdain for conspiracy nuts. Now, the first half of the song is all about him preserving his sandwiches in aluminum foil, which is great. But then it flips over to him wearing a tinfoil hat, the proverbial tinfoil hat, and going on and on about conspiracy theories, which I despise, and I think you do too.
I do, and I want to make a distinction, though. And this is something I get into conversation with all the time. It's not a problem to question things. It's not a problem to look at multiple point of views. It's not a problem to disagree with what the popular conception of something is. The problem with conspiracies and conspiracy theorists, and the funny thing is conspiracy theorists, of course, hate the term conspiracy theorists, but there is a difference between someone who questions the norm or questions the information they're being fed and a conspiracy theorist, because a conspiracy theorist to me is someone who specifically looks to disagree with everything. Everything. Everything to a conspiracy theorist is a conspiracy. And that's where I'm like, okay, I've had it.
Yes, it takes healthy skepticism well past the point of what is healthy. Brian, are you with us on this?
I am right there.
Good. Because I want to get into the video. Eric, I know you particularly must have loved the video for various reasons.
Yeah, it's spectacular.
Isn't that your boy who is the reptilian cameraman?
Yeah, that is Pat Oswalt.
Right. So I listened to the song. As I said, I bought the album and I was listening to the album over and over again. And then as the videos were coming out, I was watching them. And at first this one started off with him like just being overly upbeat about something as pedestrian as foil. But then right at the middle when he sips his tea and then it goes from talking about foil for a sandwich to foil for an aluminum foil hat, the whole video takes on this ominous tone. The screen starts showing like all kinds of grim images and it becomes like a total conspiracy nut like soundstage. And Patton Oswalt as the director is like doing the the cut hand signals. And I just started laughing. And it just got funnier and funnier as it escalated from that point on. He's going on and on about black helicopters and this huge conspiracy as the nuts will, even as things are getting out of hand. And then the director calls in like the special agents with the earpieces and everything. I thought that was great.
It was pretty great. And I'll give you a perfect example. I have a surprising amount of friends who are, of course, like 9/11 conspiracy theorists.
Oh, boy.
And here's my point on this. Again, there's a level of, like you said, healthy skepticism that can be taken too far. Because to say, and maybe I'm taking the show in a weird direction now, to say, you know, the way things happened was a little odd or conspicuous. The way the building fell maybe didn't seem in a line with what may or may not have happened is totally appropriate. Questioning those kind of things is appropriate. Those things are fine. It's the jump, the leap that so many people have made that obviously if this happened, then it must be this. Like, oh, obviously our government was involved. Like, that's a big leap to make with no evidence to make it. Because even if the evidence you're giving me is true, that doesn't bring me to your conclusion at all.
Right.
I couldn't believe how many of my friends became like structural engineers overnight.
Right. And once you're willing to take a leap that's that absurd, you might as well just go the extra mile and assume that the whole thing was orchestrated by our reptilian overlords as depicted in the foil video.
Right. Again, saying things happened unusually is fine. saying things happen unusually, therefore, is not okay.
Yeah, and I think with this song, particularly in that second half, Al does a great job sort of lampooning these absurd conspiracy theorists. Brian, you said you were right there with us. Anything to add?
Kudos on the reptilians, Al. Brilliant touch. It could have been Airy Lou Lalilei. It could have been New World Order. It could have been anything. Great move with the reptilians.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of V, so it really worked out.
Wow, V, yeah, there's a throwback. Is that where the whole notion of secret reptiles controlling us came from, or was that born out of that tradition?
Well, that was someone trying to uncover them.
Right. I would say that kind of notion in sci-fi and literature existed prior, but it was definitely V that made that kind of a mainstream concept.
At a certain point, I have to wonder what goal these reptile overlords might have, because things don't seem to be getting more friendly for reptiles on this planet, and they've been at it for decades now.
Well, I don't know about that. Global warming, if we're getting an overall warming, that's great for reptiles. It's not so good for amphibians, though.
Well, they've had an interstellar war raging with the amphibioids for centuries, so they want planets hostile to amphibians.
Yes, but we all know that our amphibian overlords are dwelling deep underground in the abyss, just waiting to make their resurfacing.
They are the ones behind so-called plate tectonics. It doesn't really add up. Look at the science.
And if you'll notice in the movie Abyss, they cut the scene where the underwater creatures caused tidal waves and earthquakes, because they couldn't let that information out. The overlords obviously had control of that media.
It was a little too close to home. And all I have to say in closing on this topic is amphibians and Fukushima. Look it up. Okay, I think we have sort of taken a nice tour of Al's catalog as it has intersected with our lives. And then we talked about a few hits off of this album. Any other closing remarks or any other highlights from this album or Weird Al's career that we didn't touch on?
No, but I would want to ask this, actually, to take it in kind of a different direction. You know, Weird Al is known for doing parodies. I mean, that's what he's known for. What other media, shows, artists, what have you, are known for doing parodies that really stand out? I mean, because he, more than anyone, I mean, he is the star of that genre. But it seems sometimes like he is all of the genre.
Well, I think some shows try. Like, God knows Mad TV tried to be funny.
Yes.
And that brings us back to Patton Oswalt, because he was a writer for that show, although in several of his comedy bits, he talks about how much he loathed that job so much because they would just basically cut the balls off of everything he wrote.
I think that the Al way of thinking comes through in shows like Adventure Time. I like to think that the people writing a lot of the kids shows that are out today were fans of parody and fans of Weird Al, because they very often will parody some element of pop culture or role-playing, in the case of Adventure Time, comes up a lot. You know what I mean? Sort of geek culture itself is parodied.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I don't know if Al can necessarily take credit for that, but I want to give him credit for creating the sort of milieu in which this stuff, from which this stuff sprang.
You know, I'm going to agree with your notion completely. And the show where I actually see that the most, and I do see it in Adventure Time, but the one where I see it the most is, and I don't know if you've watched it, is Regular Show. Not only
yes.
does Regular Show have tons of specifically 80s pop culture references, but it's also written in a way, and I know this was probably the intention, and Adventure Time has some of this too, where you don't, like, it's a place where kids and adults could sit down and watch it together, because there are definitely things written in there that kids aren't getting, and kids probably wouldn't care because it's just a fun cartoon. There's stuff I have watched, and either one, it's like a total sexual innuendo, or two, it's some really awkward, obscure 80s reference. And I'm like, there's no way kids are getting this.
Yeah, I should have probably mentioned Regular Show. So Adventure Time does it, but Regular Show does it to the nth degree. And I just can't not see a line from Weird Al and really people of his ilk to modern day programming. Brian, have any of Al's early days companions from Dr. Demento and so on made it big, or has he sort of carried the genre forward himself on his broad shoulders.
I think they've all enjoyed niche success, but no, there's I don't think there's anybody else. I don't think there's anybody even close, man.
That's too bad. And you got me thinking now, Eric, when Al's time to retire, let's say, comes, who is going to replace him? Or would any attempt at replacing him or carrying on in his place be seen as sort of trying to rip him off or rip off his thing?
I don't even think you'll get an attempt. I don't think you'll even get an attempt to replace him. Just, I mean, he's the entire industry.
Yeah, to Eric's point, he kind of is it. And it saddens me to think of a world where he is not a factor, because he is a force in and of himself. And without him around to take a comedic and critical look at pop culture every few years, I think the world will be a little worse off.
I feel the need to share this with you, because I'm sitting in front of my computer and just on a whim decided to type some stuff into a Google search because of our discussion. He actually has a voice acting credit on Adventure Time.
Really?
Uh-huh. For a character called Banana Man.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. We're going to have to check that one out.
We will. Well, I know Al makes a lot of cameos in other people's stuff. He's been on Tim and Eric a few times. I love it when comedians respect him enough to involve him in their projects.
Yeah, he was on Drunk History as well, one of the online ones. He was Jesus.
He was who, sorry?
He was Jesus.
You're kidding me.
On Drunk History, and one of the Drunk History episodes, he was Jesus.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, if we're going to go with his acting credits, does anybody remember his appearance on... it wasn't Tales from the Dark Side, it was the other one. What was the other one called?
Tales from the Crypt?
No, the one that was on ABC...
Twilight Zone?
Amazing Stories.
What did he do in that show?
He was like Broccoli Man.
Yes, I do remember that. Holy crap.
I don't remember Broccoli Man, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I actually have the DVD box set of Amazing Stories, and admittedly, that's not one of my favorite episodes ever, but I do remember that one.
It was, an alien was upset because none of the Venusians were ever invited to the Miss Universe contest. So he was the, like, agent for all of the bizarre alien races that the universe thought were more attractive than humans.
And his name was Broccoli Man?
I'm not sure if he had a name, but he...
No, but he looked like broccoli, yeah.
That's fantastic.
That was a great show.
Off the top of my head, apart from the cameos on Tim and Eric, I can't think... I know I've seen Weird Al in a million things. None of them are really coming to mind right now. And maybe that's okay. It's just, I'm happy knowing he's out there. And if he's going to release singles online from here on out, I'm okay with that. I just don't want to consider a world where he's not active. And that's why I found the rumors that this might be his last album unsettling, especially when I can't imagine anyone taking his place.
I find it hard to believe because he doesn't age.
He really doesn't. It just goes to show a life lived in a state of humor is a life that preserves you.
Yeah, I need more of that, man.
Yeah, man, lighten up, Eric. You're so serious all the time.
I know. It's terrible.
That's why at the age of 19, you look like you're a 30-something-year-old man.
You know, I'm willing to go along with that. If we could just stick with the 19, that's great.
That's why at 19, cut.
Yep.
Who wouldn't be? Well, I think that pretty much sums it up. Now, anything else, guys? You think we can wrap this episode up?
Think we can wrap.
Okay. In that case, I would encourage you listeners to take a few minutes off from your accordion practice to subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or whatever other software you might happen to use. Or if you're not into a pod-catching piece of software, why not check us out via the streaming service known as Stitcher.
Join the fun on Facebook by liking our page or joining our group. You can plus one us on Google Plus, and you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
Dare to visit us at nerdstravaganza.com or drop us a line at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And until next time, remember, listeners, dare to be stupid.